From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of October 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA has renamed CSRWES NIFA. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee wants to know why FSA has expanded offices in Afghanistan. And AGCO has been nabbed and fined for paying kickbacks in Iraq. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll continue our talks with Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt. Today we'll hear why H1N1, the recession, and consolidation in the pork industry might all come together to take down a big player. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at $4.41 and a quarter for the soft red, down 11.5 cents. March at 460 and three quarters, 11 and three quarters lower. The May at 473 and a half, down 11 and a quarter. December hard red at $4.59 and a half, a dime lower on the day. Back in Chicago, corn pit now 333 and a half. The settlement price for the December futures 7 cents lower. March at 346 and a half, down 6 and three quarters. The May at 355 and a half, down 6 and 1/2. And July at 363 and three quarters, down 6 and a half cents. September corn 372 and a quarter, down 6 1/4. Soybeans November contract $8.85, down 33. January 8.92, 32 1/4 lower. The March at 8.95 1/4, down 29 1/2. And the May at 8.93 1/2, down 27 1/4. July $8.96, 25 1/2 cents lower in the soybeans. Now the bean meal $2.72, down $12.70. December $13 at lower at $2.67.80. October bean oil $33.73, down 52. December down 52 at $34.07. October live cattle futures $82.95, $1.15 lower. December at $84 even, down 97 1/2. October feeders at $93.55, down $1.40. And the October lean hog futures today, $49.25, down 17.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $69.95 a barrel, down 87 cents. December at $70.33, down 87. October ethanol at $1.87 and 6 cents, up 4 5/10. The natural gas November contract, $4.70 and 9 cents, up 24 3/10. And the RBOB gasoline, that's $1.73 and a half, down 2 2/10 for the day. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, $1.79, down 3 7/10. And the propane futures, 99 cents even, just about 0.3 cents higher. Gold contract at $1,003.20 for the October, up $3.70. And the Dow at 9,510 is just about 1 point higher on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar currently trading at 77 even is down 0.18. The CRB index at 252.87 is down 2.68 on the afternoon. And the Goldman Sachs today down 5.38. It's at 454.28. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Tonight in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy, scattered showers. In the south, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range between 43 and 49, says Ed. Tomorrow in the north, cloudy, cool, some showers. In central sections in southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, a few widely scattered showers. In southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana, mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 52 in northwestern Illinois to 68 in the far south. The extended forecast says dry weather expected across Illinois and Indiana on Sunday and Monday. Showers return Monday night and Tuesday. It appears that another round of showers will come in at about Friday, with generally dry weather in between on Wednesday and Thursday. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on campus.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Marker Report on a Friday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I over in Lafayette, where there's another university, Purdue. It's home in West Lafayette, that is, to Mike Zuzulo, and he's with Global Commodity Analytics. Good afternoon to you, Mike. How are
Hello
you today?
Hello there, Todd. How are you doing today?
Oh, I am doing very well, although there was an awful lot of red in Chicago. Led down by the beans, is it all because of those big numbers that were coming out from Informa and FC Stone in the corn and the beans?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's interesting when you talk about the beans today, they represented for this week the same thing they represented last week, Todd. And what I mean by that is we were down on November about 41 cents in beans, whereas the Dease corn closed down a half a penny. Last week we had an up week in corn, but a down week in the beans. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, even though I disagree with the idea that the yield numbers are getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the beans, I think the Chicago people are definitely seeing it that way, and they're going ahead and pricing in a very big increase in the October report. Both Stone and Informa confirm that bias. The idea that we're going to have bigger long-term acres in beans is starting to permeate into the trade. And I talked to a good contact at Bloomberg today, and we were throwing issues around on the beans, and I said, you know, the crude oil looks to me to be a big issue too, because it seems like the crude oil not coming back around just gave that more energy in the bean pits to sell. And he said, I've heard that from other people where the energy markets are starting to disrupt the Malaysian palm oil market and the soybean oil and all the vegetable oil markets, because it seems to be starting to lose some of its steam as well. So I do think the beans are turning in to be the leader to the downside during this time period between now and the October 9th report.
But if I heard you right up front, you're not convinced that should be the case.
No, in fact, it was really neat, because after we got off the morning commentary, I got a half a dozen phone calls from clients and listeners, and it was really nice of everybody to call in, and they gave me their 2 cents. And it was split down the middle. I had people near Gilman call. They were getting low 60s on beans to mid 60s on beans. I had people in near the Vetersburg, Kingman area of Indiana, low 50s. Had guys up north of me in Delphi, Logansport area call, mid 50s. And so, yeah, there are some record yields around Illinois and Indiana, but I would say the bottom line from everything that I've gotten the last 3 weeks has been average. Yes, it's beat producer expectations, but right along the average of their 5-year average. Had another client in that Marshall in Tuscola area came in with really good yields of low to mid-50s, but that's right around his average. He had some fields that went low 60s, and he was real pleased with that and was well above average there. So I just think that maybe the cash market and the basis in the beans, which started way back during the Farm Science Review, Farm Progress Show, maybe that's what has caught the market by a bearish surprise. And it seems like ever since that Decatur Farm Show, when basis started to slip after the September futures went off the board, it's never really come back except for a couple days, and that's just led the futures lower.
Well, a couple of things there. So maybe we can look back and say, okay, so they found 28 million bushel in the grain stocks, and part of that came from a bigger crop last year, 8 million bushels, and part of it's just sort of unexplained. That might explain part of the slippage there, but I'm wondering, what are the reasons that you might want to stay firm on the bean market? And I don't usually take a stance on this one, but it looks to me, and I'll bet your farmers have talked to you about this, that like with corn, when we get late, there will be disease problems.
Right.
But when we get late with beans, we get timing problems. Just getting them out of the field is going to create a serious problem for producers. They're not going to be able to run in beans 6, 7, or 8 hours a day. They might get 4, 5 hours, maybe 6, I suppose, at the top. They're just too tough in the morning, and they get tough in the afternoon. It might be a very long, hard slog to get the beans out of the field. And then that complicates harvest for corn because they're not, it's not easy to change a head. And so they'll be stuck one way or the other, I suppose. And the beans will be, corn will stand maybe longer. Beans will have to come out sooner. But it sure looks like it's going to be a problem. I don't know. What are your farmers telling you about this? Anything?
Well, a few things. I think the colder it gets on the beans as well, you lose a lot of beans out the back end. I mean, that's the other thing they're really worried about is the shatter of the pods and not being able to get the beans out of the field and into the bins. And so I think that's the biggest concern they have in the beans right now. For me, from an analytical perspective, I've always taken the track, and it's usually been more right than wrong and has done me a good service to keep this in mind, that the Western Corn Belt can make up for corn yields that aren't as good as in the Central and Eastern Corn Belt. But when it comes to beans, you really need Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois to all be participating. And I would throw Missouri and Kentucky in there as well, and Michigan. You need all the major bean states to participate in getting up to historically high yields. I mean, we're talking about an Informa number that is at 44 bushels an acre. I mean, we're talking about a massive number nationally. And I'm not saying it can't happen, but what I would say is that history would say it can't happen unless everybody's firing on all eights. And I think between your points, and I think between the points of a lot of the beans going out the back end the longer we go, right, and the issue of the white mold, I think we've got issues there that would say, hold on, guys, do we really want to say we've got 44 bushels, or is it really back into that 41.5, 42 level? And I guess that's where I'm going to stay until we get deeper into harvest.
Yeah, so we end up with a 3-3 crop, if that's the case, or what we had before. So,
right, 3-2, 3-2-5, exactly. But it also, I think that's a big number, though, difference,
right,
because then you're starting to talk back below 250 instead of pushing the 300 million bushel level. And 300 million bushels in beans this time of year and at the price we're looking at and the fact that South America is going to come on hard, I mean, Abiev came out with a great big increase in their estimates. They came out with a 63.4 million ton 2010 Brazilian crop. And that hit the markets late in the day as well. So I think given the timing, the difference between 250 or below and 300 and a little bit above is probably pretty big in the markets right now.
All right, turn your attention to the corn market. Tell me about it from your perspective.
Well, I would have liked to have seen the 335 level hold because that was a major low, and we did take that out on a closing basis, a weekly closing basis, and we also took out the trend line. And I think we see here that the corn is fighting the downside, and it's fighting it with the wheat plummeting to new contract lows again today.
Right.
We're finding new six-month lows in the soybeans. I mean, we've closed below $9 in no beans for the first time since mid-July. Corn held up remarkably well given everything that it was thrown at this week, and I think I really like the grain stocks report. So I'm still mildly friendly to corn. I'm still a put buyer, but I'm still working into the mindset that if we can get a little bit more of a harvest delay mindset built in the markets and the beans and the wheat stop breaking so hard, and those outside markets gel here, we can still see a counter-seasonal harvest rally here that would take us back up to testing that 348, 349 resistance, and then we'll really see what the market's made of at that point. But I think it's safe to say at this point, going into the October report and with these pre-estimates we've gotten here, if beans and wheat keep going down, the corn's going to not be able to fight that.
Mike, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
You too. Have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon. You can always hear him again on our website at willag.org, or you can just dial in at 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. Updated with some numbers and analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 weekdays.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Dave Dickey's here now with all the ag news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, USDA Thursday formally opened its National Institute of Food and Agriculture, a new entity that will replace the Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension Service. NIFA has the goal of helping USDA improve the oversight, administration, and execution of competitive research grants. It also will provide enhanced support for the research extension and higher education programs conducted at U.S. land-grant universities and related institutions. Leaders on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee are questioning why the Foreign Agricultural Service has expanded offices in Afghanistan, taking over a traditional role of the U.S. Agency for International Development. The USDA Foreign Agricultural Service has been dedicated to analysis of foreign agricultural production and promotion of U.S. farm product sales. But FAS has placed 11 agricultural experts and one liaison officer in Afghanistan and plans to triple the number of agricultural staff in Afghanistan by the end of 2009. Administration officials have not formally explained why FAS is assuming such a large development role. The USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service yesterday said it may release updated acreage, yield, production, and stocks estimates for barley, oats, durum wheat, and other spring wheat in the November 10th crop production report. USDA says it will recontact respondents who previously reported acreage not yet harvested in several states. Georgia-based international farming equipment manufacturer AGCO has agreed to pay $1.6 million for paying kickbacks to the former Iraqi government to secure United Nations oil for food contracts. AGCO also reached a settlement with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, agreeing to pay a civil penalty of $2.4 million and another of about $16 million related to 16 oil for food contracts. And the Labor Department today says that U.S. employers cut a deeper-than-expected 263,000 jobs in September, lifting the unemployment rate to 9.8%. The rate is now the highest since June of 1983, and payrolls have now dropped for 21 consecutive months. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. That second program is our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets, and we'll record it this afternoon at 4:30 Central Time. Post it to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock. You can go get it then at willag.org. Now up next, the flu season will soon be on us, and everyone is on the lookout for H1N1, including pork producers. The nickname for that disease has caused them severe financial problems and may very well help take down a great big player in the industry. H1N1 started its public life as swine flu. President Obama, recognizing the potential economic problems associated with this moniker in its first week of public use, had the U.S. government change the official name. Newsrooms balked and continue to use swine flu. The name scared people worldwide, and pork consumption plummeted this past spring. It's been a heavy loss for U.S. pork producers that largely depend on the export market, a market they had hoped would be in recovery. Instead, the U.S. pork producers have been losing money at the rate of about $22 a head this year, says Purdue University Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. 2009 was supposed to be better than the $17 loss suffered in 2008. And while next year may see a return to profits for the industry, Chris Hurt says hog producers are in a bad way.
Well, there's just no question that anyone that's not around agriculture may not know these extensive losses going back for the hog industry to the fall of 2007. That's 2 years now, and really extreme losses this year that were excessively stimulated by the H1N1 concerns in late April and extending through the summer, and some loss of export business due to that, and certainly some other factors that caused some reduction in our export business. The question I think we've all had is how much equity is there in these hog operations? How long can they continue to lose money? Who's going to be left standing?
This is a question not pointed directly at family farms, but at the corporations to which they are tied. Still, the fate of the larger entity is likely to be the fate of the hog operation on the family farm. Chris Hurt believes much of this prosper or fold tale was written in the middle part of the decade.
If we're looking for positives, we can say that there were a series of very good returns, especially back in 2005, 2006, 2007, early 2007, before we got into the losses late in 07. So producers that reduced their debt, got in very strong financial position in the middle part of this decade, probably could withstand an extended period of losses. On the other hand, those that have expanded rapidly in the past 2-3 years or really got into the business in a big way in the last couple of years and didn't have a strong equity base must be near the end.
Must be near the end. The losses that have piled up in the last 3 years have now exceeded the bloodletting of 1997 and 98. It was a time when family farmers gave piglets away or killed them rather than feeding them out. The industry consolidated, and Hurt says more than half of the pork produced in the United States today comes from maybe 20 operations. He says the question now is twofold. Which one fails, and will it be bought or just cease production? For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there.
Did you follow the market lower today with your bids?
Yes, we did.
And did your basis widen out in the process?
Basis was steady on corn. We saw a little bit of improvement on the quick shipment soybean basis. As we get some more rain in the forecast, trying to keep harvest progressing and keep moving some beans to the nearby processor market.
And your quick ship is what?
By the 9th, so a week from today.
And your bid for that one?
We're 880, 5 under the nose.
And then your regular spot bid is?
15 under, so a 10-cent inverse.
So a 10-cent inverse on that one. You expect that to stay in place a little longer than usual?
I think we will continue to see some type of incentive for keeping beans moving. You know, we've got a fight here between these early yields we're seeing coming in being very, very big, and that's weighing on the board, but we can't get a good, long, sustained harvest. We had 2 good bean days, and then it rained. So those two are fighting each other out right now.
And what are your bids on the corn?
Corn, we are at 314, and that's just a plain Ocknove bid. I don't have a quick shipment on that one, but still not a whole lot of carry. January is only 327.
Right. And then finally, what are farmers telling you, and we only have a few seconds left, about bean or corn harvest? Is it going to be really tough for them?
Yeah, I think we're looking at a long, drug-out, frustrating harvest right now. Like I said, we had 2 good days run, and we've only done beans here so far, and then we're shut off again.
All right, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, back in 2 with the weather.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. The ice cream treat was likely invented in the summer of 1900 on the Lower East Side of New York City. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union War effort. In 1866, the first patent for a tin can with a key opener was issued in the U.S. In 1887, numerous websites give credit to Rowell Hodge for the patent of barbed wire. But history shows that Joseph Glidden is the father of modern barbed wire. The DeKalb, Illinois native attended a country fair where he witnessed a demonstration of a wooden rail with sharp nails protruding along its sides. It inspired Glidden to fashion barbs on an improvised coffee bean grinder, placing them on a smooth wire and then twisting another wire around the first to hold it in place. And in 1966, Richard Shoup died, an American pathologist. He was the first to identify an influenza virus and first to vaccinate animals against influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Gleason, you're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. On the line with us to take up the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon, as he always is on a Friday, is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It belongs to NOAA and is located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it looks like kind of a cool and wet weekend, and maybe next week won't be all that much better either. What are you seeing?
Well, yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I can't improve on that too much, but it is October, so this is the time when we start getting into these type of things. It doesn't look like a very nice weekend. We did have some sunshine as a dry slot moved in over much of Illinois today, but that's now socked back in as this upper low continues to rotate over the Great Lakes, and most of Illinois and Indiana are under cloudy skies right now and with temperatures generally in the 50s to low 60s, and we're not going to see much improvement of that through tomorrow. The upper low will be slow to move out, and we'll be under its influence through tomorrow with perhaps some light showers here and there, especially most likely up north, and cloudy skies and cool weather. Now, as far as next week is concerned, it looks there's a little disagreement on the models on just how much or how widespread rain might be early in the week with a system approaching. Sunday should be a nice day. Maybe we might get away with most of Monday, if not into Monday night, with some dry weather, but it does look like possibilities for rain around Tuesday or so, and then perhaps some dry days, and then another round late next week, Friday through Sunday, with another shot of cold air. So it's going to be tough to get string together a bunch of days to get out in the fields, and then, of course, we're also watching the freeze progress and probabilities here as we go through the next couple of weeks.
You know, the problem, it seems to me, at this time of the year is once you get the weather, the evaporative rates are just really low, aren't they?
Well, with the cool weather like this, you don't get as high evaporation rates without sunshine. The only positive thing is dew points are down in the 30s, which means pretty dry air, but it's still the capacity of the air to hold that moisture is reduced as the temperature goes down, so it's a little bit tougher to get the evaporation you need. But hopefully we'll get some milder days in there where things can start to dry out a bit. But like I said, it looks like it's going to be tough to string together any number of days of dry weather, any more than two or three, because of the active pattern we're in.
And that's through the next week. I know it gets tougher once you go out to the second week, but what does it look like?
Well, it's still looking pretty active. It's hard to pinpoint any days, but I don't see us breaking out of this pattern of rain every maybe 3 days or so here for the next week to 10 days. And that's just what it's set up right now, and I don't see any really signs that it's going to break out of that with any kind of permanency, at least not for the next 10 days or 2 weeks.
Steve, thanks so much.
All right, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. It belongs to NOAA and is located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, as is Illinois Public Media. We're the broadcasters for the Closing Market Report. You can always visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week will be on the web tonight by about 6 o'clock. Go get it then. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great day.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.